Today's topic is one that certainly concerns everyone. Is the federal budget too big? Is the government spending money improperly? The controversy centering around this question has brought out some pretty strong opinions, which will be reflected in our discussion today. The moderator for New World again today will be Edward Rosenheim, Jr., professor of humanities in the College, University of Chicago, and sitting on the panel will be noted authorities in the field of economics and administration. Monitor goes now to Edward Rosenheim, Jr. at the University of Chicago.
As this morning's headlines reveal, the federal budget of over $71 billion proposed by the president has created a controversy which cuts across party lines and has produced enormous diversity of opinion. To discuss this proposed budget this morning, we've assembled at the New World Roundtable three gentlemen whose opinions, while they differ very radically from each other, are based on authoritative knowledge of economic problems. They include Mr. John Nuveen, investment banker and trustee of our University of Chicago, whose civic leadership has included important responsibilities in the conduct of the nation's foreign aid program. From Northwestern University, our panel includes Professor Robert Eisner, distinguished member of the Department of Economics. And the University of Chicago home team is represented by Professor Milton Friedman, familiar to our regular listeners as a doughty veteran of many a roundtable skirmish, and familiar to students of economics as a brilliant and distinctive economic thinker. Well, gentlemen, about this huge proposed federal budget, let's get to the heart of the matter in sort of round-robin fashion. Should it and can it be cut? What's your opinion, Mr. Nuveen?
I would phrase it somewhat differently. I think we should have a smaller federal budget. We should struggle to see that we have a smaller budget. We are confronted at the present time with the results of actions in the past, and I don't think that it is feasible at this time to cut the budget. But I think we should face the fact today that it is a sizable budget, that if we set forces in motion, we can cut it. And this should be our goal.
This should be our goal in the future.
That's right.
How do you feel about it, Mr. Friedman?
The federal budget, in my opinion, can and should be cut. The budget is big because the government is big. And the government is big partly because it is doing many things which it seems to me might better be left to private individuals and to states and municipalities. I agree with Mr. Nuveen that one cannot cut it all at once, that partly we have the heritage of past actions. But it seems to me that it is never too soon to start the process of trying to cut the government down to size. So I would say, let's begin cutting now.
Well, Mr. Eisner, are you going to make peace between these two positions, or are you going to increase the controversy?
I'll probably increase it. Seems to me that in looking at the budget, we should try to answer three questions. One, what is its effect on the general problem of maintaining prosperity without serious inflation? On this, I see no legitimate criticism. The ironic fact is that the huge governmental expenditures of the last two decades have been the main prop and insurance of our prosperity, and the price increases of the last few years do not threaten to get out of hand. Second point to answer is, what is the effect of the budget on the distribution of income? Who's getting the benefits and who's paying for them? And here again, I doubt that there are really serious general criticisms on the part of all of the people. The third question, the big one to me, is what are we spending our money on? Is the government getting us the things we want? Should the government be getting us other things, or should it be cutting down expenditures and taxes so that we can get other things for ourselves? The real question here is, should the government continue to spend some $43 billion a year on what we call national security, or should we spend on education, on homes, on a vision of a happy, rosy future for the country?
Well, in short, you apparently are by no means shocked at the actual figure, this staggering sum of over $71 billion. You don't like the way in which it's proposed that this money be distributed, is that
right? That's right.
I would like to emphasize, Mr. Rosenheim, that this figure of $71 billion that you've been mentioning greatly understates the role of the government in our economic affairs. This is a budget figure, but there are some very important items which are not included in the budget. For example, the proposed highway program, which is expected to involve expenditures of nearly $2 billion in this coming year, is not included in the budget at all as of the moment. Again, the whole Social Security program involving tax receipts over $10 billion is not included in the budget. If we asked not what is included in the budget, but what is the total number of dollars which the federal government would, under this budget, be taking from people in the next year, the answer comes out to be something like $86 billion rather than the $72 billion you mention.
So while you view with alarm the $71 billion, you feel that there's even more alarm to be viewed with if you regard the entire figure of $86 billion.
I think there's merit to Friedman's position, and I think we should realize that our federal government has this bigger role. At the same time, it has been a principle of municipal debt, that self-supporting debt, those functions which are paid by the revenues which arise out of them, the gasoline tax for the highway debt, the payroll deductions as applied to Social Security, eliminate that as a direct debt. And the burden which we are faced with is recognized, I think, in the present budget. And the important consideration here to me is that not only our present expense of national defense, but those things that we have spent not for future wars but for past wars, added together, comprise 82% of our budget. Now, whenever we have a war, this represents the failure of our foreign policy. And if we are going to find a way to reduce our expenditures for national defense, which I agree with Eisner are a waste, we've got to find some way of improving our foreign policy so that we can reduce the world tensions which make this large military budget necessary.
But given those world tensions, Mr. Nuveen, I'm sure we would agree that we must now maintain an effective and strong military force, so that, as for myself, the part of the budget where I have least question is the military part of the budget. I think we must spend as much as is necessary in order to provide us with adequate security. But I would emphasize that this figure of 82% that you cite is an overstatement of the part of government activities which go for present or past wars. If one is going to judge government activities, one must judge the whole of them, including those things which, appropriately or not, may not be included in the accounting budget.
It seems to me that we shouldn't talk about cutting the budget by eliminating the disgracefully small items for education and welfare. Let's face the facts. There really isn't very much to cut in the budget. It's just pittances, unless we're going to cut this military budget. And it's about time that we stop feeling that any figure that's quoted to us for the military must be right. We're all certainly agreed that we want to safeguard our country. We want to make sure that we have a strong, adequate defense. But it doesn't follow that you should simply spend more and more, and no matter how large that figure is, that helps our security. You may actually get to a point where you're spending so much you create a climate in the world that jeopardizes our security.
I am not a military expert, as I suspect, Mr. Eisner, you aren't either.
Agreed.
And I think if we're going to cut the budget, we must talk about what activities the government is carrying on that it should not be. I agree with President Eisenhower's statement that the way to cut the budget is not by solely and not only by looking for items of waste, because I doubt that very much can be accomplished in this way. If we're going to cut the budget, we must look at programs and activities that the government is now carrying on that it shouldn't.
Well, I gather you're prepared to look at some of those programs and activities in defense of this view.
Yes, I was going to turn to one, Mr. Rosenheim, because I don't agree with Mr. Eisner that outside of the military, there are only pittances to be cut. The present budget, for example, includes $5 billion, or nearly $5 billion, on a farm program. This is not a pittance, and it seems to me the whole of it ought ultimately and in the not-too-distant future to be cut out, and now is a good time to start cutting this $5 billion item, which so far as I can see is bad domestically and even worse in terms of our international relations.
I would like to agree with the principle. I would like to challenge the figures, however. The total agricultural budget, as I understand the figures, is about $5 billion. And of this, we have included a lot of other programs. So that when we get down to those things which, those items which are directly a part of the stabilization of farm prices and soil bank, we only have about $2.7 billion. This is still important, and I agree, should be eliminated in the future. But this is a law that's on the books. We can't now change the appropriation. We've got to go along with it. That's why I think we should recognize that we can't come up to this point and then think that we can cut the budget. We can start now to see that next year's budget is smaller by eliminating items such as this.
You won't even go along with that, I suppose, Mr. Eisner, will you?
Well, I think realistically, Congress uses its appropriation power to influence programs, and we can face the facts that one way we express displeasure at a political program is to balk at spending the money on it.
Well, we've been playing with this relatively trifling matter of the $5 billion that's set aside for farm programs. In the total context of the $71 billion, of course, this is literally a very small fraction. What about some of the other aspects of government spending, Mr. Friedman? I take it you're equally unsympathetic to those.
Yes, but I really want to stop a moment on the question of whether this is a trifling item. I agree with Mr. Nuveen. What's important now is to start a direction which we can continue on in the future so that we cut the budget a little now, but in that way pave the way for a very much greater cut in the future. And I think that the 2.7 or the $5 billion is an essential and important item to cut. Another item I would myself be inclined to cut would be part of our expenditures on economic aid abroad. This is not unconnected with the agricultural or farm program. We are, it seems to me, doing one thing with our right hand and another with our left. With our right hand, we are disturbing our international relations abroad by our farm program, which involves imposing quotas on imports from abroad, which involves disturbing other countries by dumping agricultural surpluses abroad. In this way, we are undermining our international position. And then we are trying to recoup it, on the other hand, by making expenditures under the heading of economic aid, many of which, it seems to me, could well be eliminated.
I agree completely that our agricultural surpluses have been a great embarrassment to us and caused much of the trouble that we are now facing in the world. For instance, when we had to take away Burma's market for rice, we invited Red China to come in, into Burma. When we flooded the world markets with our cotton, we forced Egypt to go to Russia in order to buy arms. And there are many other things which people do not connect, but this is a very important thing to undertake.
The Egyptian case, Mr. Nuveen, that you mentioned seems to me particularly striking because
yeah.
Here is an area where we are now being urged to spend large additional amounts in aid, where the difficulties trace in very considerable measure just to the farm program and the dumping of cotton. What happened is we encouraged Egypt to produce more cotton by maintaining domestic prices for cotton and accumulating surpluses. And then later, we gave them the second half of the 1-2 performance, as it were, by dumping the cotton abroad.
Well, I agree with this, but it's the principle of the legislation rather than the amount that's involved. When we talk about $2.7 billion, we are talking only about a small percentage of the total of $72 billion, and this carries out the point which I want to make, and that is that the real reduction in the federal budget has got to come in the area of defense or in the area of foreign policy. If we could make a 20% reduction in all of our domestic budget expenses, including agriculture and the like, we'd only have a 3% total cut in the budget. And this is not what the people are looking for. This is trimming. This is not cutting.
I strongly agree with you on that point. And I think we should hit back again at the issue that we really can afford to spend lots of money if we want to. The question comes up as to what programs we're spending on. Friedman doesn't like very much the agricultural program, doesn't like aspects of the foreign aid program. But if we're really interested in economy and simply cutting the budget, the place to cut it is where there's a lot of budget to cut. What happens is that people say they want to cut the budget and then use that as an excuse to develop some particular policy of theirs. That is, they feel that we should have a different agricultural policy, which would not cost as much money, perhaps. Now, this is all well and good, but why confuse basic political policy issues with the question of budget cutting. Of course, I, for one, find myself in favor of cutting the budget because I don't find myself sympathetic with the military expenditures, but I can also say that those that really want to cut the budget should look there. That's the place to cut it.
But I agree with you, Eisner, that what we want to look at are the ranges of activities that the government is engaging in. What we want to cut is the role of government in our personal and economic life. The budget is a symptom of this. It's a sign of how large and how enormous our government has gotten. The increase in the size of the military is an evil, but it seems to me a necessary evil that I see no way at the moment of getting away from. I would hope that in the course of time it could be cut. But the fact that this large element of the budget is highly inflexible and difficult to cut does not seem to me to a reason for saying we should be extravagant on all other counts and that we should engage in activities that are undesirable for a government to engage in.
Well, this to me, though, is like taking a family that's spending an awful lot of money and has to worry about cutting the budget and deciding to tell their small boy, "We'll hereby cut your allowance from a quarter a week to 20 cents. And we have a crucial, serious problem, for example, of education for the next generation. I think the security of the country, of our whole way of life, depends upon how we meet it. And the fact is that unless more money is spent by government, education is a governmental process, we apparently won't meet it adequately. And I also think that the fact is, apparently, that we need more federal money for this.
Education is in part a governmental function, but funds can also be spent for education and should be spent for education by individuals in their private capacity.
That's agreed.
The more we impose taxes on people in order to spend this through the government, the more we weaken the private abilities and the private facilities for spending money on education. I, for one, feel that the present proposed federal aid to education is undesirable.
Well, this seems to suggest a crucial matter of principle on which you gentlemen differ. That is, if you take the, to you, Mr. Eisner, relatively small amount that the present budget calls for expenditure to education, you set aside this whole military question as something that we're not competent to judge. It seems to me the real controversy between you two men isn't a matter of principle. What is the role of government in such an important area as education? Does that set it out correctly?
That probably does. Seems to me that there are many areas in which we cannot say that everything should be left to the private market. Education, to me, is clearly one of them, where the federal government should help, and I think we're really in a crisis state there.
We have two questions. One is whether education and to what extent it is a public function, and the second is what public group shall do it, municipalities and states on the one hand or the federal government on the other. I would feel that to the maximum possible extent, education should be retained as a function of municipalities and state governments, that there is no necessity for the federal government to take from the state of Illinois with one hand and then give money back to the state of Illinois with the other.
Well, I see that we're getting involved in a debate on federal education, which could well take two or three other periods. The important thing is that as long as we are putting out as much of our budget as we are, or of our national resources as we are, for defense, this $43 billion, we just have less money to spend, whether we spend it through the federal government or through the state governments, for those things which would make our country internally strong. And the only way that I see that we can reduce this tremendous expenditure are by those policies which will reduce world tensions. Reducing the budget is not going to reduce world tensions. Increasing military expenditures or maintaining them at this does not reduce world tensions. Military expenditures are purely negative. They help to hold the situation down, but they don't correct the basic causes of tension.
Well, I take it then that one aspect of the budget that you really consider the most crucial one, Mr. Nuveen, is the question of foreign aid.
Foreign aid is the only item that is really constructive. And in itself, it is not constructive. It's only constructive if it's part of a foreign policy which is constructive.
I certainly agree with that last point. I'm for foreign aid in principle, but to the extent to which the foreign aid we are using helps depends upon whether it implements the correct policy.
The foreign aid we are now spending, insofar as it's going for economic development, seems to me to be
working against our long-range interests abroad rather than in favor of it. The reason is that our long-range interest is in a world of free nations with free markets and free trade. By making grants in our foreign aid program to governments, we are, in other countries of the world, strengthening the government sector at the expense of the private sector, and thus, in the long run, it seems to me, promoting the very opposite of what we want to bring about, promoting socialism and governmental control rather than the free market.
You have just time to answer that one, Mr. Levine.
I would just say this. I believe in free enterprise, I'm sure, as much as Mr. Friedman does. Any country today that's faced with raising their standard of living, however, in the present world context, is faced with a crisis. And when America was faced with a crisis in World War II, we changed to state planning, state socialism, and only for the duration. Other countries, I think, are faced with this problem, have got to have a higher degree of centralized control. They don't have the time of trial and error, which we used.
And I take it that you simply don't buy the notion, Mr. Friedman, that this accounts for.
We would have been better during World War II to use the free market more.
Well, that's a fairly characteristic statement of yours, Milton, with which to end this discussion. I'm not sure we've made up our minds. I don't think we intended to make up our minds initially. But I do hope that our listeners have the feeling that discussion of the federal budget can be conducted in a responsible and informed fashion, even though opinions may differ very radically, as they have this morning. I want, therefore, to thank Mr. John Nuveen, investment banker, trustee of the University of Chicago, and Chicago civic leader, Professor Robert Eisner of Northwestern University, and finally, Professor Milton Friedman of our own University of Chicago. Now, this is Edward Rosenheim returning you to Monitor at Radio Central.
Thank you, Edward Rosenheim, Jr., Associate Professor of Humanities in the College, University of Chicago, for moderating our discussion today, certainly a pertinent one in the eyes of all citizens, and our thanks to your eminent colleagues for their searching comments during the discussion. We shall be looking forward to next week's edition of New World, the subject, a fitting one for the day, the position of mother in the family. You're on the Monitor Beacon. Take one.